Good morning again. This morning we are continuing in a little pamphlet, little booklet called An Epitome of Theosophy. This is like the third week we've been doing it. It is, if you would, a cliff notes on the secret doctrine, which becomes the master thesis, if you would, or the master's tome. And that's followed by the ocean of theosophy, which is a small book. So we go from the cliff notes to the Reader's Digest version, and then the secret doctrine is like this. We're doing the cliff notes. But before we begin that, we're going to do some announcements and a reading of the declaration of this lodge and all lodges around the nation and the world. Obviously, you know about the Sunday meeting. We begin here at 11 o'clock and we go to 12 sharp. The doors open at 10:30. In the front of this building, there is a reference library you passed as you came in. Probably didn't see it because the doors closed. But it's a reference library, and it's available to you on Wednesdays from like 5:15 to 7:15. It is not a large library, but it is well-equipped with theosophical literature, books, magazines on other religions, arts, and sciences as well. So you can come in there and read up on the class that's going to occur on Wednesday evening, if you like, or any other subject. And there's always a student in there to give you a hand with finding what you're looking for, which seems to be the most difficult part of studying, isn't it? On Wednesday, this month, we are continuing in the Bhagavad Gita, which is over a 5,000-year-old epic poem. And it's about a war, and it's more than that. When you come, you'll find out it's more about an actual war in yourself. It's probably the most widely read book in the world, far surpassing the Bible. And it's just a little bigger than this. Okay, on Wednesdays we begin at 7:30 and we go till 8:30. The doors again open at 5:15, so you can use the library if you like. And I said we're studying the Bhagavad Gita. Sundays we do something like this. We are studying the Epitome, which is a little bit more formal type discussion. However, Sundays in August we do not have any activities at the lodge. Wednesdays continue, Sundays do not. We pick up Sundays again in September. Okay, I believe that covers the announcements. Now this is the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophers, like I said, here and all over the world. It is the mortar that keeps all lodges and drives all lodges together. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave at the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate among this idea, among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. That is the one guiding document that the United Lodge of Theosophists holds. Part of what that said was, don't believe anything you hear up here. Check it out yourself. Independent study. Okay, we're going to get started with the epitome of theosophy. And typically we have someone do a summary of the pages for this for today. That didn't happen this week, so what we're going to have is people read this part, and it starts on page 15 in the epitome, which is the beginning, and starts at the turning now, and the first reading will end with crime or disease.
Turning now to the system expounded by these sages, we find in the first place an account of cosmogony, past and future of this earth and other planets, the evolution of life from elemental, mineral, vegetable, animal, and human forms, as they are called. These passive life elementals are unknown to modern science, though sometimes approached by it as a subtle material agent in the production of life, whereas they are a form of life itself. Each capital or grand period is divided into four ages or yugas, each lasting many thousands of years, and each one being marked by a predominant characteristic. These are the Satya Yuga, or Age of Truth, the Treta Yuga, the Vapara Yuga, and our present Kali Yuga, or Age of Darkness, which began 5,000 years back. The word darkness here refers to spiritual and not material darkness. In this age, however, all causes bring about their effects much more rapidly than in any other age, a fact due to the intensified momentum of evil, as the course of its cycle is about rounding towards that of a new cycle of truth. Thus, a sincere lover of the race can accomplish more in three incarnations during Kali Yuga than he could in a much greater number in any other age. The darkness of this age is not absolute, but is greater than that of other ages, its main tendency being towards materiality, while having some mitigation in occasional ethical or scientific advance conducive to the well-being of the race, by the removal of immediate causes of crime or disease. Our earth is one of a chain of seven planets. It alone being on the visible plane, while the six others are on different planes and therefore invisible, the other planets of our solar system belong each to a chain of seven. As the night wave passes from the higher to the lower in the chain until it reaches our earth, and then ascends and passes to the three others on the opposite arc, and thus seven times. The evolution of forms is coincident with this progress. The tide of the life bearing with it the mineral and vegetable form, until each globe in turn is ready to receive the human life. Of these globes, our earth is the core. Humanity passes from globe to globe in a series of rounds, first circling about each globe and reincarnating upon it a fixed number of times. Concerning the human evolution on the concealed planets or globes, little is permitted to be said. We have to concern ourselves with our earth. The latter, when the weight of humanity has reached it for the last time in this upward round, began to evolute man, subdividing him into races. Each of these races then has, through evolution, reached a period known as the moment of choice and decided its future destiny as an individual race begins to disappear. Races are separated world from each other by catastrophes of nature, such as the subsidence of continents and great natural convulsion. Coincidentally with the development of races, the development of specialized senses takes place. Thus, our wisdom has so far developed by senses.
The sages further tell us that the affairs of this world and its people are subject to cyclic law, and during any one cycle, the rate of quality of progress obtaining to a different cycle is not possible. The cyclic laws operate in each age. As the ages grow darker, the same laws prevail. Only the cycles are shorter, that is, they are the same in length in the absolute sense, but go over the given limits in a shorter period of time. These laws impose restrictions on the progress of the race. In a cycle, when all is ascending and descending, the adepts must wait until the time comes before they can aid the race to ascend. They cannot and must not interfere with karmic law. Thus, they begin to work actively again in the spiritual sense when the cycle is known by them to be approaching its turning point. At the same time, these cycles have no hard lines or points of departure or inception, inasmuch as one may be ending or drawing to a close for some time after another and already begun. They thus overlap and shape into oneness, as the day does into night. And it is only when the one has completely ended and the other has really began by bringing out its blossoms that we can say that we are in a new cycle. It may be illustrated by comparing two adjacent cycles and two interlaced cycles. When the circumstance of one circumstances intersect each other, or by the imagining a man as representing in an act of walking. The progress of the cycle is rate of advancement can only be attained by taking the distance covered by his paces, the points at the middle of each pace. Between the feet being the beginning of the cycle and there ending. The cyclic progress is assisted or deterioration further permitted in this way. At a time when the cycle is ascending, developed and progressed beings known in the Sanskrit terms as nadis descend to this earth from other spheres where the cycle is going down, in order that they might also help the spiritual progress of this world. In like manner, they leave this sphere when our cycle approaches darkness. These nannies must not, however, be confronted with the Mahatmas and adepts mentioned above. The right aim of this true theosophist should, and therefore, be so, to live that they influence, their influence may be conductive for the dispelling of darkness, to the end that such nannies might turn again towards the sphere.
Okay, thank you. So we have like four pages in this little book that doesn't seem like much, but it's two whole chapters in this book. So it's quite a bit of material in a very short space. Your questions are invited. Yes, Annabelle.
Why do you think it's necessary for us to have this huge picture? How does it help me in the task of getting wiser?
How does looking at the total concept of rounds and races and globes help you in your daily life? I guess that's the question, right? How does it help you become a better human being? Well, I guess if in the part you'll see the words universal brotherhood. In the declaration, you heard the words universal brotherhood. Everything is derived from one infinite source. That source is the first proposition of the United Lodge of Theosophists. Everything is a piece or a part. It doesn't matter if it's an atom of an ant, an atom of a human, the earth, the universe, everything is a part. And therefore, when you look at the total picture, you're looking at yourself as being a total part of that. So if you understand the above as below, as above as below, that's the old Gnostic adage, and it is so true. What you see in macro is the same in micro. Yes?
Well, the terms used in this part can throw us for a loop. Because we normally do not think as we read. We hear, but we're waiting to go to the next statement. So we got some idea that the British closer. And we remember at the boardwalk in the old days, this large tapping machine. It was a large machine where you kept moving in, moving in, moving in. Then periodically cut off some, and then rapid intervention. Psycho, motion, differentiation, all going on at the same time. This is a very musical thing. And if we pay attention, eventually we get the idea. The purpose is to get us into the idea.
It's another illustration of the blending of many things into one. That's really delicious. Hello.
In that third paragraph, in this age, he talks about four different ages,
yes.
And in this age, all causes bring about their effects much more rapidly than any other age. And he says this is a fact due to the intensified momentum of evil. And we're wondering how intense evil brings about a more rapid age. But then he goes on to say, you know, the flip side of that is the lover of the race can accomplish more during this rapid age. So what's the relation between
them? Yeah, it's an interesting piece of literature there. The way he assembles that, the Kali Yuga, 432,000 years long, and in I think it's the ocean, Mr. Judge says that, no, it's in questions for questions about answers, or answers questions on the ocean, and in there it says that Mr. Judge says that any effort put forth, any energy put forth during the Kali Yuga has four times the benefit. And it's the same thing as it's said here. And it's like, as you grow older, things start happening more rapidly in your life. It seems like that. You say, where the heck did the time go? But you don't say that when you're young. When you're young, you say, wow, I can't wait to get to the third birthday or Christmas. It seems like it's a month away, your mom will tell you, but it's an eternity for a child. So time is warped based upon where you're at in your development. So as you get older, time goes fast. I mean, it's like yesterday, you were a lot younger. And all of a sudden, you're 30 years old, or you're 60 years old. Happened overnight. Yes.
Well, the part about evil, being the prompter is fascinating. And next week, we take up the astral light, and that's part of the explanation. We, as thinkers, have been using the only force there is, spiritual, in negative, selfish, material ways. So we have created a lot of
evil,
meaning that it's less than what it should be. So in order to be ready for the next cycle, which is going back to the golden or the truth,
mm-hmm.
we have to get rid of some of that. And that's why we're in a cycle where we can do that more quickly.
Yeah, I think the use of the word evil here is a very, very wide brush, all-encompassing. And that's what is confusing about it, because you think of evil as some twit out there robbing a bank or beating people up or doing something like that. That is evil, of course. But evil in this context is also caring more about getting a new car than your neighbor who is looking for another meal. Yes. Yeah, one of the things Theosophy says is, and it's very simplistic, it's do your duty. Whatever comes to you, do it. the best you can at that time that you're doing it without looking for rewards for doing it. You're not doing it to get a slap on the back. You're doing it because it's in front of you and you are responsible to do it. That's one way right there. Yes, in the back.
Yeah, the statement is, if it comes directly to you,
yes,
it's got your name on it,
yeah,
you're the one that started it off.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
yours.
That's part of the cycle, and that cycle is called karma.
Down the bottom, the sages tell us the affairs of this world. So these cyclic laws operate in each age. As ages grow darker, the same laws prevail. All cycles are shorter. So this is like some big stuff that they're talking about. And most of the answers to big questions like this in world religions is because that's what God does. What's the theosophical view? Where are the cycles coming from? Who makes them?
The cycles begun did not have a beginning, and they won't have an end. The yugas are, as they're called, it's a Hindu word for a period of time, an era, in a larger epoch, if you will. It's a stage of evolution. The Hindu stage of evolution is called a yuga. We're in Kali Yuga. That is the Iron Age, as most people think of ages. They think of gold, silver, bronze, and iron. The Hindus say Kali Yuga, Iron Age. It's the shortest period of that evolutionary period. It is 432,000 years long. It begun about 3,100 years BCE ago. And that's when Krishna died. That was the end of the great Mahabharata war. And that's when it started. So we have a long way to go. We're like 5,000 years into 432,000. You have a question?
The number 5,000 comes up a lot. Was the Bhagavad Gita written in the Kali Yuga, or was the building blocks developed before?
No, the Kali Yuga, the Bhagavad Gita was written before the Kali Yuga, because Krishna was alive, right? The Kali Yuga begun when Krishna died, right? Which was 3,100 years ago or before the common era. Yes? So, is that wrong?
It's 3,100 BCE, not 3,100 years ago. So
no, I said before the common era.
And we've read that the Gita was written at the time of Krishna's death, which began the Kali Yuga, because it contains the principles which anyone who follows these principles through the Kali Yuga, the Bhagavad Gita,
mm-hmm,
would use that cycle for the best that it could use. But we're thinking actually that we're in a Gita class right now, sorry.
Yeah, that's Wednesday night, yes.
We think an important point is that cycles are a definite period of time,
yes,
and it always help in one way or another for humanity, but an individual doesn't have to be in the Iron Age if they take, as was said, the principles of the Gita and apply them. The world around them is in an Iron Age, but they're in a different period of growth.
Yeah, any individual, sure, any individual can be going through a golden age. It's about their karma. If all the good karma is coming to you right now in this life, you're having a golden age within the Kali Yuga. So it's individual by the karma. that you have accumulated and are experiencing. Yes.
But Mr. Judge gives us an opposite example. We see someone who's a total miser, selfish and cares about nothing but money, and we make the assumption that we're spiritually superior, but that soul might be going through the very last passion that he has to get rid of in order to advance very quickly. So that may be a soul that's on its way to greater wisdom than we can even imagine. So it isn't necessarily how it looks to even ourselves, let alone anybody else.
Yeah, I think once before on this platform I gave an example of personal example of being in India.
Can
you speak up? We're having trouble hearing you. Oh, sure. I said, a long time ago I was on this platform, I gave an example of being in India and having a Hindu guide, and I was being attacked by little beggars, and you know, they reach up to you like, and you feel so bad for them because they barely have any clothes on to begin with. It's hot, you know, it's always hot. Anyway, and I reached in my pocket. I was going to give these children some coins, and the guide said not to. She said, that's their experience, that's their karma, they need to go through that, and it may be the last thing they need to experience before they move on spiritually to something better. And I, at the time, I thought it was a whole bunch of bunk. To be truthful with you. But I didn't. I asked her wishes as my guide. Yes?
The biggest thing today, it seems, that people are interested in is their physical health. In the morning, the sun rises, they get up, and their day begins. If they would go back that night and look at the day, they would find their didn't eat the right. You went to the doctor and said you had high blood pressure. Then you had this disease. Well, right away we should get an idea that poor health is not good for you. Who's in charge? This is a perfect example of the age of darkness, the age of light. And that it's given us that we are responsible for condition, not only in our own physical life, but all around us.
You
it teaches us how to take charge of the betterment of all.
You are the perceiver of your world and how your world is affecting you individually. You are responsible to take care of yourself. No one else is, just you. And if you want to do things, you will take note of your day at the end of the day. Take note of your day and what you could have done better or differently, not necessarily better, but differently, and how it affected the people around you. What could you have done differently to more positively affect those around you and therefore yourself? That's an excellent way to end your day.
With the account that was mentioned of the student in India being guided, in that kind of situation, it completely makes sense for the outsider to respect the guidance from someone who knows the community, and so you honor that when you do as the Romans do. Yet, with theosophy, actually, is the teaching that you stand back and watch these people have their problems because that's their karma and it's not my fault? Is that the teaching?
No.
We understand karma, but where are we going with that?
We get back to universal brotherhood every time we look at an issue. And it's the golden rule. Theosophy is basically the golden rule. You can sum up all of these books. Do your duty, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I don't think there's anything that is right about not helping out people that need help. If you can, but you don't necessarily throw things at them because they need them. Maybe you teach them how to do something instead. You help them out the best way you can in order that they can do better themselves. Yes. Yeah. The first thing that came to mind when I read that is, oh, that's a Venn diagram.
They could have just said Venn diagram.
Yeah, I bet you thought the same thing, right? That's what it looked like to me. You know, when you have overlapping circles, that area where they overlap, that's the key right there. Yeah, it's a wheel within a wheel, and it never stops. Never, ever stops.
One of the things we think is hard to learn is, am I really helping this person, or am I doing too much, or am I interfering? We think it's a struggle, and you have to go with your heart and then review what happens.
Yeah, there's a fine line between helping them and then perpetuating poverty, for instance. How do you not do that? It's case by case, individual by individual. Sad to see. Yes?
Well, we're not alone. We have to work together.
Yes.
And what came to our mind is the upstairs of the ancient time. Go, the line of people out of sight. All you see is the puppet. It was strange and moving just right, and how they got feet and hands moving all of them together. It gives you the impression of natural. But there was only one action out of sight. Could we be that individual aspect?
Yes, you are a spark of that oneness, the highest principle. It's called Atma. It says in this part tonight that we're part seven globes. Well, man is seven part two. We have seven principles as well. And the highest of those principles, it's number seven, if you would. Sidebar, the Theosophists years and years ago used to be put in the newspapers in the 1800s as the seveners, because everything was seven this and seven that, seven this. Sidebar. Anyway, you are a divine spark of that universal principle. Yes.
Why don't I know that? I mean, if I am that, I should know.
why don't you know it? You do know it. You just don't realize it. that's probably the difference. There are many parts of you that you don't even think about, for instance. Talks about the seven globes, and you only know about one. Seven globes, or seven states of consciousness, or seven states of being, whatever you want to call it, but you only know about one of them. And that's because you're living that. You are conscious of that. And in chapter three, chapter 3, it gets into the earth chain in this book, chapter 3, the ocean of theosophy. It goes into it very detailed, and it's more easily understood. This is a synopsis. But it tells you that, getting back to your question. It's like a web page, for instance, a website with 7 pages. You only know of one because that's the one you have open. The others exist, but they're hidden. It's kind of like that. It's also like your body is made up of many systems that you're not really aware of, but they're there. You have the skeletal system, muscular, circulatory, endocrine, I can't even say the word. And you've got all these systems that are just like your body. If you looked at just one, you could see it looks like a body, but it's just all blood vessels all running everywhere. But if you just took a picture of that, it would be a body. You have 7 of those. You have many of those, but you're not aware of them. But they all gather together. In chapter 14, I think it is, you have the words coadunition and consubstantiality. And all that means is everything comes together in unity, and they may or may not be made of the same substance, but they're in unity. Yes. Yeah, they kind of heard the sweet melodic tones of their drill sergeant telling them exactly what to do, how to do it, and they learned very quickly. Yes?
I think an important point to remember about why we don't know, since we are a spark of the divine, we are the only sparks that have will and choice. And the reason we don't know we're spiritual beings is how we've used that one power. We've built walls around ourselves and created intense karma for us as individuals and whatever group we're part of, religion or nation, and we have to work our way through them. The block is in ourselves. We created it, but we created it with that same one power that can unmake it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as self-conscious human beings, individuals, we have the power of choice, and we make thousands of choices every day. Some of them are even good. But because we have that, we have added responsibilities to ourselves and to others. Nobody lives by themselves. They may think they do, but they are dependent upon many other people during the course of their day, not to mention month, life, and years. If they eat anything, they grew it, they bought it. Many people were involved in that. Where did they get the food from? People grew it for them. People harvested it, people did that, people did this. They trucked it in, they put it in the stores, they sold it, they did all these kinds of things. And the guy is sitting there thinking, I did this all by myself. I live by myself. You don't. You're supported by many, many individuals along your life. But you don't think about them. And hell, they don't think about you either. But wouldn't it be a better place if we did? No one is an island. Probably heard that before. Yes, sir.
I'm reading this paragraph, and I like to clarify a point. It says, humanity passes from globe to globe in a series of rounds, first cycling about each globe and reincarnated upon a fixed number of times. I'm wondering, in terms of evolution, human evolution, what is the highest reaching point that we have made so far? And what kind of tools do I have to measure or to have an idea of where is the state that we are right now?
Well, let's see.
Can we restate the question, please?
Yeah, sure. He wants, the gentleman would like to know, during his personal evolution, how does he know when he has reached the highest plateau he can, and what is that highest plateau? Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know how far you've reached. I know you have reached the fourth round and the fifth subrace, which we all have. That is like the center of the seven globes. Evolution begins with the highest, goes to the lowest, back to the highest again. When that happens, that's one round. High, low, high. One round. Okay? You do that seven times on each globe for a total of like 49 times, seven times seven. Okay? You're in the center right now. How high can you go? In this lifetime, you're not going to go any higher. You can prepare yourself to go higher by being a better human being, if that's possible. I don't know you, you probably are the best you can be. That's fantastic. Not many people can say that. Where can you go? At the end of this round, you will be the highest you can be in that round. Then you will go to another round. You're going to reach nirvana. Your goal is to reach nirvana. Your goal, ultimately, is to be one. Absolutely one with the highest principle, Atma. Yes, sir.
Could you please give us a list of the beings on this earth who can say, I think, therefore I am?
I am what?
How many of the creatures on this earth can say, I think, therefore I am?
Well, thinking is thinking is a word that defies really definition. When you say you think, that's not the same as me thinking. That's not the same as anyone in this room thinking. You think because you're self-conscious and you can think that I am I. I don't care what is the matter with you. You can always say, I am I. If you have amnesia, somebody says, I. They might not know their name, but they know I. I is the divine perceiver in you. And you never, ever lose the I. When you're little, you're just a little Tommy. When you're big, you're a big Tommy, but you're still the same I. I want a taffy. I want a new car. It's the I. It's the same I. That never changes. Yes.
You think Descartes had it backwards. It's I am.
Therefore I think. Yeah.
As spiritual beings, that, as you said, that identity never changes. What changes is the conditions because of how we use that power to think. Wasn't it Plato who said ideas rule the world?
Ideas rule
the world. Ideas that we hold make us respond in a certain way.
Yeah, and they're your ideas, they're not necessarily anyone else's. Yes.
The question was brought up in terms of, you know, how high can we go and how do I know where I am and how do we measure this, which is a classic example for the way we're raised and the way that we think, because we want to categorize it and figure it out and all this kind of thing. But the teachings do tell us that one can estimate the direction that he's taking, and that is by and purely, it's purely intuitive. That's first. And a study of the Bhagavad Gita introduces certain concepts that are completely outside of Western thought. It's the three gunas, the three qualities that infuse every aspect of the world. A fantastic study. But the message of understanding these gunas is, how involved am I in these three qualities by comparing and contrasting them? And the more you can pull yourself out and get and maintain harmony with them to the extent they have to be involved, but the more you can pull yourself out and rise above it, that's a sign of the direction that you're taking. But to get your brain to understand what they're talking about is
a study. And we mentioned before that the Bhagavad Gita is what we study on Wednesdays, and we do it just about every year during the summer. People look forward to it, and they come to it year after year after year. But in that Bhagavad Gita, towards the latter chapters, actually it's mentioned in 5 or 6 chapters, but towards the latter chapters, they mention gunas, G-U-N-A-S, and they are qualities of man. There is a sattva quality, a rajas quality, and a tamas quality. And they represent how you do things, how you are emotionally, how you are as a human being. Are you happy? Are you sad? These are qualities. Do you look for the rewards for everything you do? Do you not help people? Little old lady crossing the street gets hit by a car. Do you help her out? Do you do anything? Those are the things that are categorized in these qualities. And by knowing during your day, remember I said at nighttime you should look back during your day? Look back on them and see how they fit into those types of categories. And you can be more than one at the same time. You can have sattva, rajas, and tamas qualities all at the same time, or 60% of one and 20% of the other, and you know, that type of thing. So there's nobody is 100% all of them. Not in this room, not on this earth. Yes.
We think a better question than how high have I reached or what level have I reached is to ask how much am I reaching out to help anyone else?
Yeah.
Because we are just one spark of a unity, everything around us is our responsibility. So if we're looking to achieve, we're not part of the whole. We're thinking of ourselves alone. It's a huge question. Universal brotherhood means I literally have to treat others as I want to be treated. And we do that as an afterthought.
Yeah, Yeah, you're right. Sometimes that is the afterthought. Geez, if I'd have done that better, maybe I would have got a bigger raise. You know, or maybe I could have negotiated for more vacation time if I'd have done the right thing or done the right, you know, whatever. It's all about me. Yes.
Well, and the other thing is, our goal is not nirvana. It is the natural result of the effort of development.
Right.
But our goal is to resist that and to stay and help other souls.
Yes.
The greatest example, of course, is the Buddha. And if it weren't for those great souls, would we be talking about these ideas right now? No, we'd be practicing rituals that would get us to nirvana faster.
Yeah, I'd probably be doing a rain dance. Yes?
Well, you've read a lot of the books, not necessarily as they are given out here, and we enjoyed them, but never thought about what we were reading. We felt a sensation of some kind, excitement, and so forth. But here we're saying that we have to get into it deeper than we've been. We have to think, what does that mean? And we found that 100 words that we just told you like that, we only understood 3 or 4.
Yeah, there's
while
a...
The rest with us in our method of approach so that we can understand.
Yeah, I guess there's a couple adages that help that out, or would give that as an example, and that would be, you have to pay your dues. The other one is, you have to do the work. It's amazing how successful you can become if you put the work in. 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. Listen, our meeting is just about over. We have time for one more question. Or not. Yes, ma'am.
I thought it was interesting you were talking about how the goal is sort of the self-actualization or self-consciousness, I guess, to like recognize your spark or to feel it. But it's interesting that self-consciousness has sort of like a double, it's like a double-edged sword almost. Like when you're self-conscious, you know, how we use it in a negative sense, it paralyzes you, it like deprives you of your actionability. And I don't know if it's like a generational thing or something, but I see a lot of people I know afraid to, that are my age, I'm 30, who are afraid to take action. And I think if we're in like a more rapid cycle of evil, like everything going on around us, it's almost like a, I'm wondering if there's a way that if that's addressed within this.
I guess part of it is because it's such a litigious society right now. People are afraid to get involved. You know, they don't know what the outcome will be if they help somebody out. People have been helped. People have helped other people and got sued because of it. And it's always in the back of people's mind, I guess. Should I get involved or not? Should I help or not? And it's totally individualized for that specific event. No one can tell you. You have to make that decision on yourself. Our meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.
There, that's all.